free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
It's Thursday, April 30th, year of our Lord 2020. I'm David Knight, your host. Today we're going to take a look at a new drug. Fauci wants a new drug, and he thinks he's found it. It's kind of interesting to see how reluctant he was to try the efficacy of a drug that had been around since the 1940s for malaria, even though there was a lot of anecdotal evidence saying that it was effective, and there was a lot of historical evidence to show what the side effects were. They judged it to be safe. It does have some, hydroxychloroquine does have some serious side effects, especially for people who use it for chronic situations, for long-term use. Nevertheless, he shut it down, poured cold water on it, even though in previous, it was 7 years ago, he said, hey, look, you know, we've got these old drugs out there. Why wouldn't we use them? If you're a doctor and you've got somebody who's dying of something, why wouldn't you allow them to have access to a drug? But no, not the hydroxychloroquine. Trump just doesn't know. He's just an idiot. He is for keeping Fauci there, quite frankly. He is an idiot for keeping Fauci there. And he's standing behind him and propping him up. And so as we look at this, he's got a new drug. But remember how everybody came after President Trump about hydroxychloroquine. Again, why wouldn't we allow people to try that? Why would the FDA get in the way of that? Why would Fauci pour cold water on that? And now he is so excited after just a couple of tests for this new drug. They don't know if it's effective, and they don't know if it's safe. But they're not going to do too much testing. They're just going to roll it out. I wonder if he's got any stock in this company, Gilead. He's telling everyone, there is a bomb in Gilead, right? You might want to spell that B-O-M-B. Instead of B-A-L-M. Anyway, when we look at the hydroxychloroquine, remember we had the death of an Arizona man? And it was kind of strange because, you know, why would they take, it's like it was chloroquine. It was fish tank cleaner. It wasn't the same form that people use medicinally. So it was similar, but not the same. This guy evidently had a tech background. People were saying, that's really strange that he did it. And why would they take President Trump's advice? Because they didn't like Trump, appeared from a social media post. Now the police are investigating the wife. Gary Linnaeus, 68, died in March after drinking fish tank cleaner that had chloroquine phosphate in it, not hydroxychloroquine. He and his wife, Wanda, had confused it, they said, for hydroxychloroquine. Neither had been diagnosed with the virus, but they'd watched the briefing from President Trump. Yeah, same thing we see replayed this last week. Oh, President Trump told me to take to drink Drano to cure this. Oh, okay. Well, I'll go ahead and do that since he said so. People in New York who listen to everything that President Trump says. Now a homicide detective has been assigned to investigate Gary's death. The Mesa Police Department says it doesn't mean that his death is suspicious. It's just standard procedure. Well, I think there's a lot that is suspicious about it. We'll see what develops from that. Meanwhile, as we talk about bleach, the Spanish have sprayed, the Spanish government has now sprayed an entire beach with bleach. And again, I think they need to talk to Hillary Clinton about her bleach bit program that she used to clean up her dirty data. Yeah, she just wiped it clean. She said, what do you mean wiping my server? You mean like with a cloth? You mean like with bleach or something? No. We want to investigate that. The media never thought there was anything suspicious about that. They thought it was suspicious that President Trump was summarizing what the guy said and not making a distinction between topical treatment and internal treatment. And nevertheless, it turns out there are people who are using internal treatment of light to kill viruses and bacteria. So they promptly purged that off of the internet. They did a kind of a bleach bit on that, you know, from like Hillary Clinton was saying. Well, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
It's Thursday, April 30th, year of our Lord, 2020. I'm David Knight, your host. That's right, it's America Held Hostage, day 45. It just keeps going and going. When are we going to take the masks off? It's just like what the Iranians did. We're all being held hostage. We're being held in a lockdown. And you know, I'm not the only one who's upset about this. Elon Musk went absolutely bat crazy, you could say. Yeah, filled with explicatives and a rant. And so we won't be reading this verbatim because we are carried by radio stations. But he says, it's breaking people's freedoms in ways that are horrible and wrong and not why they came to America or built this country. What the F? Excuse me. Outrage. Outrage. Frankly, I would call it forcible imprisoning of people in their homes against all of their constitutional rights, in my opinion. I finally agree with Elon Musk on something. He called the shelter-in-place orders fascist. And he says, we're a bit worried, as he was talking on the investor phone call. He said, we're a bit worried about not being able to resume production in the Bay Area. That should be identified as a serious risk. And then he comes back and goes, give people back their blank freedom. The expansion of shelter-in-place, or as we call it, forcibly imprisoning people in their homes, as I just read, is, in my opinion, breaking people's freedoms in ways that are horrible and wrong and not why people came to America or built this country. If somebody wants to stay in their home, that's great. They should be allowed to stay in the house, and they should not be compelled to leave. But to say that they cannot leave their home and that they will be arrested if they do, this is fascist. This is not democratic. This is not freedom. Give people back their blank freedom. He said Tesla would be fine after the COVID-19 crisis ended, but that small companies would not. He went on to say, quote, everything people have worked for all of their lives is being destroyed in real time. I think the people are going to be very angry about this and are very angry. Yes, yes. Just wait until it fully dawns on them. How this agenda was imposed. At another point, he said in the call, so the expansion of shelter in place, or as frankly I would call it, forcibly imprisoning people in their homes against their constitutional rights, an outrage. It will cause great harm not only to Tesla, but to many companies. And while Tesla will weather the storm, there are many small companies that will not. Yes, that's precisely the issue. That is exactly what they intended. I have a listener send a thing to me pointing out, go back and take a look at the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917. Thanks, Vince, for this. Good point to point out. I've been talking about the ruthlessness of Mao and how he used starvation basically just erasing and taking the society down to the bottom level to establish his power. There was no reason for the Great Leap Forward. It was just mass murder. But of course, as he reminded me, Lenin did the same thing. The Marxists always need poverty. They always need it. It's the starvation part of it that really, really empowers them. And so we're going to talk about that as well. But there's an article from Peter Koenig, Global Research. He says the title is The Farce and Diabolical Agenda of a Universal Lockdown. Just think about that. A universal lockdown. Yeah, it is a farce. It is a crime. First comes the farce, he says, an almost universal government lie around the globe about a deadly virus that the WHO called COVID-19. And he points out the connection the close proximity to the meeting in Davos, the World Economic Forum. That happened in latter part of January, January 21st through 24th, 2020. The decision for a global lockdown, literally for the collapse of the world economy, was, in his opinion, taken at the World Economic Forum. Now, who was it that was at the World Economic Forum? on behalf of the Trump administration. Well, let's see. That would be Jared Kushner, the guy who is basically going to fix everything, right? Ivanka Trump, she was in charge of helping small business. And Steve Mnuchin, the guy who's writing all the checks. Those three stooges were the ones who went to Davos this year in January. And then, lo and behold, right after that, we get a worldwide unified strategy. Everybody goes full China, shuts everything down. What a coincidence, isn't it? A big coincidence. On January the 30th, the WHO, so they have Davos, the 21st through the 24th. January 30th, WHO declared COVID-19 a public health emergency of international concern. At the same time, there were only 150 known COVID cases outside of China. And they called it a worldwide problem. So there's a difference between an epidemic and a pandemic. You know, an epidemic is something that is massive. It's going to fill up all the hospitals. Have we seen that here? A pandemic is an epidemic everywhere. Everywhere. Well, haven't seen that here. We've got hospitals that are closing, right? People who are idled, who are being laid off because the hospitals are empty. So there were only 150 known cases outside of China. They declare a pandemic. That was the WHO. Again, right there with China. And when you say China, just substitute the globalists, the people at Davos, Jared Kushner, Ivanka Trump, those globalists. No reason whatsoever to declare a pandemic, he writes on March 11th. Dr. Tedros of the WHO converted it into a pandemic. Yeah. Instead of a public health emergency, it became a pandemic. This gave a green light for the staff, for the start, rather, of implementing the plan. And he goes back and traces the various aspects of this that I've been talking about. You know, the 2020 Rockefeller Report, where they said, let's see. If you have a strong government and a very weak private sector, you know, they looked at the strength and the weakness of the government and the private sector. So that gives you four different scenarios, right? Now, the scenario where you've got a strong government and a weak public sector, they call that lockstep. How do you get lockstep? Well, you do that with a lockdown, don't you? Right? I mean, you could have a strong government and a strong public sector, or you know, one of them could be strong and the other one weak. Well, the one that they went for was lockdown, because that's the lockstep scenario. And then, of course, we have other indications of where they have wanted to go all along. We have the ID 2020 program that Bill Gates has been talking about, how he wants a global ID by 2020, and how he is working with the people at MIT to fund a microdot nanotechnology combination vaccine and tattoo. They're very proud of it. They talked about it. I mean, this is not a conspiracy theory. This is a scientific fact. They developed it. He paid for it. Get your vaccine. Get a tattoo. You won't see the tattoo. You'll only see it if you use our special app and our special light. So we'll be using that to basically inventory you as livestock. That's why they keep referring to this as herd immunity, right? That's a herd mentality. You can get natural herd immunity. They were talking about herd immunity well before there were any vaccines. But when they keep using the term herd, protect the herd, they view you as livestock to be inventoried, tracked, vaccinated. And, of course, ID 2020, the microdot vaccine tattoo. You've got the immunization agenda 2030, openly talking about that, also funded by Gates and others. The IA 2030 is what they refer to it as. By 2030, they want everyone, everywhere, every age vaccinated. Vaccinated. With what? Well, with everything, right? Whatever they say. And, of course, the UN 2030 agenda, also everything being in place by 2030. See, in the next 10 years, we have to have a complete financial meltdown, civil wars, world wars, and then they'll have their planned society in place by 2030. We'll be right back. Stay with us. come back, we have a little bit of video, actually, of Elon Musk. We cleaned up the profanity. He was pretty upset. Used a lot of words we're not going to play on air. But he was very upset about what is happening. Let's play a little bit of that video, clip number 9.
Yeah. I should say we are a bit worried about not being able to resume production in the Bay Area, and that should be identified as a serious risk. We only have 2 car factories right now, one in Shanghai and one in the Bay Area. And the Bay Area produces the vast majority of our cars, all of S&X, and most of the 3 and all of the Y. So the extension of the shelter-in-place, or frankly, I would call it forcibly imprisoning people in their homes against all their constitutional rights, that's my opinion, and breaking people's freedoms in ways that are horrible and wrong, and not why people came to America.
Yeah, exactly. And then on Twitter, he tweeted out, as The Verge points out, echoing President Trump. He wrote in all caps, "Free America now." Exactly. Folks, we are in a race. We have to free America now. This is it's not a pandemic. This is a psychological manipulation. We are basically being put into Stockholm syndrome. If we get people accustomed to this, if they let this stay long enough, that people don't want to go back to work. And that's one of the things that we're seeing now. A lot of people say, hey, I'm making more money now. I don't want to go back to work. Let's just do the universal basic income thing now and keep it. And if the government gets its act together and actually starts writing people fiat checks, then this fiat government, this government that does everything by dictate without any authority, you know, that's the whole thing about a fiat currency, right? It doesn't have anything behind it. These orders to shut down America are part of a fiat government. It's fascist. Fascista. That's right. It has nothing but a dictatorship behind it. And he is exactly right about that. First time I really agreed with him. Anything I've got to say. And, you know, for President Trump to tweet this out, President Trump, you need to stop using Twitter. It's nothing but a pacifier for you. You think you've done something when you say something about it or you tweet it out. No. If you don't fire Fauci, NIH representative, if you don't fire Birx from the CDC, that is essential. That is essential to stop this gaslighting of the American people, this campaign of fear to turn us into a FEMA emergency shutdown government, a martial law by de facto. You're going to have to change people's attitudes. And if this gets ingrained, you know, President Trump said, oh, let's... I think we need to have emergency orders to open up the meat processing factories. Well, how are you going to do that? You're going to force people to go back to work? You got a lot of people in these factories say, well, I'm scared to death by Fauci and Birx. I'm not going back to work. If you let them continue to do this, you don't even understand that if you're trying to get this to work. I had somebody send me an email and said, I think they do understand. I think they do too. I don't think this is stupidity. But let's just be charitable here for a moment and say that President Trump doesn't know what he's doing. Because if he knows what he's doing, it's much worse, much worse. And I'm afraid that's the case. But let's just be charitable and say he doesn't know what he's doing is evil. That it is not supportable by either principle or pragmatism. It's not supportable by the Constitution he swore to uphold. Well, let's just say that he doesn't know any of that. And the real issue here, folks, and we've got to do this at the local level because I really don't think President Trump's going to do anything about it except sit there and tweet about it, talk about it, and then do nothing. We've got to stop this by opening up America ourselves at the local level. Don't count on Governor Abbott. You know, he's playing that let's wait and see game as well. The longer this goes on, the less of a chance that we're ever going to get out of it because it's affecting people psychologically. It's creating a fear, a Stockholm syndrome of captivity where they love their captors, they love the disease, and they want to keep it going. And this has been part of the plan, as I was just saying. You know, you go back, you look at Davos a week later, WHO starts rolling out, yeah, we got an emergency here. And Davos, of course, is run by the World Economic Forum. They were also the sponsors. We talked many times about Event 201, right? It was paid for by the Bloomberg Center for Public Health at Johns Hopkins University and the Gates Foundation and the World Economic Forum that runs Davos. And isn't it surprising that all this stuff just got declared right afterwards, right? And it follows right down that 2010 Rockefeller report. If you want the lockstep scenario, you've got to lock everybody down. They already wargamed it. And as they pointed out, you had a lot of pharmaceutical vaccine interest groups, as well as the CDC, there at the simulation, Event 201. You know, just like the CDC, the World Health Organization gets half of its money from private sources. And unlike most of the UN organizations, the WHO was created by the Rockefeller Foundation, and they still get half of their stuff from private sources, just like the CDC. It gets money from the federal government, but it gets half of its money from about half of its budget from individual contributions. So where is this all going? Of course, we've talked about this many times. An electronic ID for every person on the planet, mandatory vaccination, digitized money, no more cash, and so forth. And if you look at what Gates has put out, if you look at what Zuckerberg has put out, both of them have offered a cryptocurrency that also would be a global ID. That's one of the ways that they sell it, to try to displace the current establishment of central banks running fiat currency. And then the substrate of all of this to make everything work is 5G. 5G for the bandwidth that they need to control, to monitor you, to have the Internet of Things. And, of course, you will be one of those things that they control in cyberspace, in actual space. You know, Google calls their prototype city in Toronto Sidewalk Labs because that's where you're going to be living. And they're going to be looking at everything on the sidewalk under a microscope, complete biometric tracking, you know, but all the self-driving cars, the complete control of everything, the biometric tracking everywhere, the geospatial intelligence that they've been rolling out for decades, two decades at least, very intensely. All of this depends on 5G and what follows it. And of course, there are massive health issues with this as well, as many of us have already seen with this. As we look at what is happening with this, as they've shut down small businesses, where we have, as this article from Global Research points out, 9% of business transactions come from small, medium-sized enterprises. They've now gone to zero, zero. Most of the jobs are with small and medium-sized companies going to zero. They're all shut down. You can't have, you're not essential if you're small or medium-sized. It just happens to be 90% of the transactions and most of the jobs, but that's not essential. And, you know, as we look at this and universal basic income coming in, that was supposed to be a response to artificial intelligence taking people's jobs. They're saying we're going to have 50% unemployment or more. Now, it was predicted as a result. Now it is a precursor for AI.
Reverse engineering the high-tech takeover plan. This is The David Knight Show.
There's nothing left. No work, no income, no money to pay for food, rent, medication. The government orders them, the deprived, poverty-stricken, to stay home. Locked down. Confinement at home? Where is home? Home is gone. No money to pay the rent, keep social distance, don't get together, stay apart. This could spread. We got to spread the fear. That's exactly right. That's the article from Global Research, the farce and the diabolical agenda of the universal lockdown. And as Mises Institute asks, will it take a food shortage to end support for the lockdown? They say Americans are uniquely privilege to the point of simply imagining that they can stay home for months and months without suffering severe economic hardship as a result. Our unique privilege is a delusion. The mentality that America is rich and will always be rich. without any particular effort on our part. This is one of the reasons why history goes in cycles. You have a generation that has seen, grows up in hardship, doesn't take anything for granted, works very hard. The next generation, a bit softer. The next generation, very soft. The next generation, real soft, privileged, this attitude. And they are ripe for the picking. And then it starts all over again after they starve and have a war. 80% of respondents think the shutdowns by various state governors are justified. One-third support extending the closure for another 6 months. Wait until they start getting those checks on a regular basis, because right now they're not able to work, and they haven't seen the checks, many of them. Once the government starts getting that together, just try getting people to go back to work. Yeah, you're going to see this privileged attitude really expand. The reflexive, unthinking complicity from the American public is partially explained by media hype and propaganda. And they point out the Mises Institute, Americans simply fail to understand or even think about the fragility of distribution chains and the goods and services that we rely on. This is why weeks ago I said, let's just stop and go back to iPencil by Leonard Reed. Think about how complex the supply chain and the manufacturing chain is for something as simple as a pencil. That's why he picked it. He said, I could have done a car. I could have done something complicated. They didn't have computers back in the 1940s. I think it's 48 when he wrote that. So I could have done something complicated like a car, but let's just keep it simple. Now let's talk about how complicated it is for this to happen. And nobody plans it. Nobody makes it, right? Because all the subcomponents that go into something as simple as a pencil, going all the way back to the each of the elements that go into it, how they have to be brought in from other places and so forth. There's so much information that nobody, not even somebody as smart as Jared Kushner, can figure it out. That is the central conceit of people who even want to be benevolent dictators. They don't have enough information. And so you see people like Stiglitz railing about this. And now we got Biden out there going on and on about Milton Friedman. These are people who are arrogant enough to, or maybe they think you're just stupid enough to think that the economy can be centrally planned and that they can do a better job. They can't do any kind of a job. They don't even understand, I think, how badly they've broken this system. I don't think anybody understands. We're just going to have to experience it. They give an example in the Mises Institute article about what's happening in India. Take a look at where people live close to the bone already. The national work moratorium created there by the prime minister has sent millions of migrant workers and unskilled laborers into very real danger of starvation. Already living in a hand-to-mouth and penniless, their jobs essentially banned. Many have taken to walking hundreds of miles in 100-degree heat to get to their home villages in hopes that they can be fed by their families. In a country with widespread poverty and depressingly little per capita capital investment, the shutdown is a death sentence for many. Well, we see from The Guardian, we're not talking about people going to bed hungry. We're talking about extreme conditions, emergency status, people literally marching to the brink of starvation. If we don't get food to these people, they'll die. And Mises points out, this is what poverty really means. And this is why when you get these preening idiots like AOC telling you that we need to shut down everything and railing about capitalism, you know, because her favorite economist, Milton Keynes, doesn't like capitalism, doesn't like free markets. When you get them talking about this and how we got to stop wealth and we got to stop privilege, they're talking about starvation and poverty for you, austerity, that we're now seeing. Been imposed immediately by the government. And now they're waiting in the wings with universal basic income. Nancy Pelosi saying, we got to make this permanent. You know, I even saw Justin Amash. He's now running, he said, for candidate as a Libertarian Party, right? And I thought, well, good. Maybe it's I got somebody to vote for. Because I disagreed and still disagree with Justin Amash. He came out, personally attacked President Trump. Wanted to impeach him, left the Republican Party at that point in time. There was no reason to impeach President Trump. None whatsoever. And I think it was shameful that he bought into that just because he didn't like Trump personally. But quite frankly, now is the time to impeach President Trump for violating the Constitution if you want to do it. Nobody does, though, because both the Republicans and Democrats are in on this fix. And I thought, well, you know, maybe Justin Amash is different. No, Justin Amash said, well, if I was going to do it, I wouldn't have made a complicated system to hand out money going through the banks and the and so forth to make these loans, because that's where a lot of corruption came. Yeah, that's right. It was bad. It was crony capitalism, corona capitalism. He said, I would just hand it everybody checks everywhere and just make it a monthly thing. It's like, okay, fine. Yeah, he doesn't understand principle or pragmatism either. He wants to go to, think about this. We got the Democrats, we got the Republicans, we got even the libertarians out there who are pushing universal basic income. Just shut everybody down. We don't need jobs. We don't need freedom anymore. Just give people a check. Pacify them. Soft kill. Stay in your home. We'll give you a 5G. You can entertain yourself to death. Radiate yourself to death. We can track everything that you... We'll send you a check. It's fine. So as Mises points out, this is what poverty really means. You don't have any cushion of wealth for an emergency. Poverty is best described as a lack of savings and resulting capital, leaving people totally dependent on new and consistent income to survive. It is a condition only capital accumulation can improve, and yet capitalism is blamed for the unfolding tragedy before us. And let me explain to you that if we are locked down without a job, without any upward mobility, never have the prospect of starting your own company, because everything, whether it's a service or whether it is manufacturing, that's all those positions already been taken by the big box retailers or the big box manufacturers who have their friends in Washington. So, yeah, you can't do that. We're not going to let you do that. And so you're locked down, dependent on a check, and guess what? You don't have any wealth. You're dependent on that monthly check. How do you like that right now? Do you like the fact that you're locked down, dependent on a check from the government, and they're unable to get it out to you? What happens when this idiot government allows the Federal Reserve bankers to completely trash the dollars that you were counting on? When the Federal Reserve and the globalist bankers completely eviscerate the petrodollar? You know, when this fantasy bubble that doesn't have anything behind it, this fiat currency, do you think they're going to just be able to command goods and services to come to you? That's what's going to happen. We'll be right back. Stay with us. All right, so is our food supply problem going to be the end of the lockdown? Is that going to be what wakes people up, a hungry stomach? You know, when we go back to the 1928 campaign for presidency, you had Herbert Hoover running for re-election. October 1928, it was a year before the stock market crash. And it wasn't Hoover's committee that did it, but it was the New York committee to reelect to elect Hoover. A chicken in every pot was their slogan, and that became a famous slogan for Hoover. Vote for Hoover. Wages, dividends, progress, prosperity. Yeah, it nothing at all about freedom. It was all about money. They'd had the Roaring Twenties. They'd really enjoyed the prosperity, the inflated prosperity of the stock market, and the way the Federal Reserve had pumped that money in, all the speculation, the margins that were there. And so they had a chicken in every pot. And that all blew up because these people were looking at the pragmatism at the prosperity, even talking about, you know, progress, you know, basically Democrats light progressivism. Let's just make this work. We don't really care about freedom, right? And so now, today, we're kind of in the same situation. Are we going to have a chicken in every pot come this October? Will we? I don't know. Boneless chicken is the first to go scarce as the coronavirus hits the U.S. meat supply. As Fortune points out, goodbye boneless chicken. Food retailers across North America are swapping boneless chicken legs for less popular thighs and drumsticks as a wave of shutdowns at meatpacking plants has reduced the supply of these sought-after cuts. They say outbreaks have shut down almost a third of the U.S. pork capacity, and Canada, Cargill Incorporated, has idled its beef plant in Alberta, which accounts for about 40% of Canada's processing capacity. 40%, just like that. Boom, gone. Poultry suppliers are still facing labor shortages, many of them operating with less than 50% of their regular workforce. And again, are you going to be able to get these people to go back to work by just saying, you got to go back to work? They're scared to death because of Fauci, because of Birx, because of the scam. It's not a pandemic. It's not even an epidemic. Yeah, people are sick, and it's slightly worse than the flu, but it's not that bad. It doesn't warrant this. And as I said before, even if it was bad, let's assume that this is as bad as the models and the garbage data predicted. You would then have two problems. You would have shortages of food, shortages of medicine. You would have energy blackouts for the hospitals. And you would have that in addition to a disease. Shutting down the economy was never the appropriate response, regardless of what this was. Even if this was a highly effective bioengineered weapon, shutting down the economy was not the right response. Not the right, never was a right response. Never. Grocers generally are accepting cuts of meat that require more cutting by their in-house butchers in order to keep their meat counters as full as possible, because meats such as sirloin and strip loins that would typically have been sent to restaurants before the pandemic shuttered businesses are now being sold to retailers who are offering them in different sizes to get the price point down. This is how the market is trying to adapt to the boneheaded rules of government. I don't have any boneless chicken. We just have boneheads in government shutting everything down. Like I said before, yeah, there was panic initially with the toilet paper. But then what happened was this has persisted, not because they can't manufacture paper anymore, but because most of the toilet paper was being set up to go to institutions. And so it was packaged differently. The same thing we're seeing here with the beef. As they send the beef and the chicken out, a lot of it was for restaurants. They process it differently. They have different types of cuts than people use in retail. So grocers are trying to find a way to sell the end cuts that are taken from the leg or the trunk that consumers don't know are typically not buying. So they're promoting the idea of grilling them, marinating them, barbecuing them to try to make them more tender. This is the way they're trying to adapt to this. And we see that beef prices at the meat packing plants are soaring, 62% up from lows in February, according to Bloomberg. And so there's a lot of different ways that you can look at these meat prices. When you look at what's happening to the farmers, their prices are going down. They can't sell their stuff at all. So what's going on? We're seeing the price of beef per head at about 84 cents a pound. When you look at what's happening as it comes out of the meatpacking plants, it's gone up 62%. It's now $3.30 a pound. It's selling at about $7 a pound retail. So we're seeing big inflation at the meatpacking plants at retail because we've got a shortage. Meanwhile, they got a surplus in the farms, and they're having to slaughter their cows. This is what happens when government gets involved. It's just that simple. This is Venezuelan economics. As a matter of fact, let's play a clip. I've had this for a couple of days here. I haven't played it yet on this show. A clip from a rancher talking about what is happening in his from his perspective. Video clip number 7.
Hey, everybody. This is Shad Sullivan coming to you from the headwaters of Bitter Creek, Archer County, North Texas. We have to talk. State officials will be assisting to help identify potential alternative markets if a producer is unable to move animals, and if necessary, advise and assist on depopulation and disposal methods. Ladies and gentlemen, we are plowing under vegetable crops from coast to coast. We are euthanizing millions of chickens. We are aborting sows and burying feeder pigs. We are dumping milk by the hundreds of thousands of gallons, and now they are preparing us to depopulate the fat cattle ready to harvest because of a bottleneck created by the effects of COVID. This thing hasn't been created by COVID, but the effects of COVID and the logistics therein. Yesterday, the first shipment of imported beef from the country of Namibia hit the shores of the United States of America. And yet this morning, they are telling us to prepare to euthanize harvest-ready cattle.
That's right. We're going to buy it from Namibia. But while the farmers are having to destroy food, and you know, you've seen the empty shelves at the grocery stores, this is happening because we've got this preening little bureaucrat, Fauci and Burks, and Trump is allowing them, he's standing by passively, allowing them to destroy this country. I'm just fed up with what's going on in Washington and in the Trump White House specifically. Never did anything to end the corruption. We're going to talk about what's going on with General Flynn. Good example of that. That happened day one, that plan to take Flynn out. President Trump just stood by. Vice President Pence joined with the deep state to take out, to slander Flynn. Oh, yeah, yeah, I think he misled me too. Yeah, let's let him take out. Totally manipulated Trump. And Trump, even though it's been very obvious to everybody what happened very quickly after that, it's quite obvious. I was talking about this from the very beginning. It's quite obvious to me what was happening. And as this was happening, I said, this is very concerning because this is making, in my opinion, makes Pence like George H.W. Bush as vice president, you know, the globalist guy on the inside. But now President Trump has done nothing about any of this. He's done nothing to stand by Flynn. He's done nothing to stand by the Constitution. He's done nothing to stand by the small and medium-sized businesses. What he does is he stands by Fauci and Burks as they continue this. Is it going to wake you up when you can't feed yourself or family? When you have no job, where you're totally dependent on crumbs from the government because there's no meat in the store, and the farmers are going out of business simply because they have busted the supply lines? Empty shelves, escalating wholesale prices, escalating retail prices, empty shelves, and farmers slaughtering food. This is your government as it destroys not only your freedom, but your food supply. Well, folks, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about Fauci's new drug that he wants to push. But we do have some announcements for you at InfoWarsStore.com. What funds this program? We now have Survival Shield X2, nascent iodine. Our fan favorite is now back in stock. It sells out very quickly, and it will sell out very quickly at 50% off. We also have our new hand sanitizer, Emmerich's Essentials Sanitizer. It comes in three different scents. You can get all three of those together at 50% off, and we're taking orders for storable food. InfoWarsStore.com.
Decoding the mainstream propaganda. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Is there a word called presbicide? You know, we have democide, death by government. presbicide ought to be a word, I guess, killing off the elderly. I mean, isn't that what they're doing across the world? We saw it first in Italy, in spite of the fact that you've seen all the horror stories in most of the mainstream media. The reports that were coming out of Italy made it very clear that the average age of the people who were dying there was 80, and that they had multiple health conditions, again, because of their age. You know, elderly people typically when they die, say natural causes, because it's natural that we all start having multiple issues in health as we get older. And yet the response in Italy was to say, even though the age, average age, was about, at first it was 80.3, and then it went to 79.5, the next report. They said, well, we're not going to do anything to treat people who are 80 years old or older. Boom, there go the death rates, right? Again, this is hurting elderly people much more. And then they lowered it in Italy because, you know, this is a government-run healthcare system. It's a poor system. There's no capital for that system. Just as I was talking about, you know, you don't have any margin for food. In Italy, India, people are starving because they're living right on the edge. And now Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. As a matter of fact, they're not even living paycheck to paycheck. They're waiting for that check in the mail from the government, from Steve Mnuchin. Is that going to be $1,200 per 8 weeks, Mr. Mnuchin? No, 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 he told the reporter. That's going to be 10 weeks. You can survive on that $1,200 for 10 weeks. Except they haven't figured out how to get the checks out to everybody yet. So, this is the system that they've got set up for. So as we look at it, the nursing home residents are 50% of the COVID-19 deaths in Connecticut. Same thing happening there. In Italy, they said, first, we're not going to help anybody that's 80 years old or older, then 70, then 60. And I relayed the story about my wife's cousin's grandmother. So you work out the relationship. I don't get into that stuff. Back in Italy, she broke her leg. And this is back in the 70s. And they were already backed up with their healthcare system. It was fully overloaded. They didn't have any COVID-19. No, no, no. They had government-run healthcare. And so they couldn't get her in. And she had to wait. You know, like cancer patients are waiting on the national healthcare system in the UK and so forth. So she had to wait. Gangrene set in, and she died of a broken leg. Actually, she died of socialist healthcare. But the nursing home residents in Connecticut comprise 50% of COVID-19 deaths. I talked about it yesterday, the fact that Cuomo, at the same time he ups the penalties for exposing an elderly person, like his 90-some-odd-year-old mother, to COVID-19. Well, I'll give you a $5,000 penalty and I'll put you in jail if you expose an elderly person to that. Well, he was forcing nursing homes to take anybody that was COVID-19 positive if they were not in an emergency situation. If they were in an emergency situation, send them to the hospital. But, you know, if they test positive for COVID-19, that's no problem. Send them to the nursing home. And so the Federalist is now saying, media doesn't care that people died because Cuomo put the coronavirus patients in a nursing home. Yeah, we do. We talked about that yesterday. New York versus Texas. New York has 50 times more COVID-19 deaths per capita. So why are we still locked down? And we are. You know, Governor Abbott has graciously said, well, you know, if you keep social distancing and you follow all the other guidelines from Fauci and Burks, we will allow you to go to restaurants and movie theaters. And these people who have been totally gaslighted and lied to and are afraid of their shadow now are absolutely outraged, because now the next step, phase two of this, is they're going to come out with more fake statistics showing a resurgence, even though 90% of the people don't even know they've got it, and then blaming it on reopening so they can lock you down again.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
As I was saying at the top of the hour, we have the number of deaths attributed to COVID-19. And again, remember, these are presumed deaths by the CDC. They're saying you don't have to test for it. You don't have to even verify that the person has COVID-19. You can just presume they do. And then you can make that the underlying cause of death. Why not, right? Because we're talking about Fauci and Birx, those organizations. They presume everything, don't they? So if you look at their figures, though, measured in terms of death per 100,000, New York's number of deaths per 100,000 are twice that of Massachusetts. New York's number of deaths per 100,000 are seven times those of Maryland and Pennsylvania. New York's deaths per 100,000 are 22 times bigger than Florida's, 25 times higher than Alabama, 50 times higher than Texas. New York's deaths per 100,000 from COVID-19 are 100 times what they are in South Dakota. And as Mises.org points out, if New York were a foreign country, wait a minute, I thought it was. I don't recognize anything about New York as being American, quite frankly. But let's just assume that it's not a foreign country. If New York were a foreign country, the U.S. total death from COVID-19 would be cut by 36%. Town Hall asked the question, if half the country's deaths were in Montana, would we have to shut down New York? You think they would? In sympathy? I feel your pain. So we're going to shut down the stock market. We're going to shut down the subway. Oh, no, they never did shut down the subway. That's part of the problem. According to the New York Times, April 19th, looking at the figures here, that says more than half, 52% of all deaths in America have occurred in the New York metropolitan area. The statistic is particularly noteworthy. We look at the entire death toll for 41 of the other 47 states at that point in time, 7,600. In other words, New York had 52% of all COVID deaths in America as of that date. 41 states put together had 21% of the COVID-19 deaths. All 47 states other than New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut have less than half, 48%. And yet they're very upset about the fact that Georgia would open up. President Trump is upset about that, too. Fortunately, the governor of Georgia said, nah, we're going to open up. Don't really care what you say. Don't care what your puppet master, Fauci, says. We're going to open up. Good for him. You know, at the same time, here's part of the other part of this. Again, focusing on nursing homes, as I said before, maybe, you know, presbycide or something, right? You know, because presbyopia is old eyes. You know, we start playing trombone to be able to read the print. That's presbyopia. The eyes are not adjusting the focus to the extremes that they used to do. So, presbycide, you know, killing all the old people, sending people who have tested positive for COVID-19 into rest homes, as Cuomo did, demanding that they cannot refuse them, as he was threatening private citizens with massive fines and jail term if they exposed elderly people to COVID-19. He was pushing that as policy. And at the same time, this happened last week, at the very end of the week. It was reported on April 17th, state of New York issued a do not resuscitate guideline for any patient that was found in cardiac arrest, telling paramedics don't revive them. However, within hours of the New York Post reporting on it, 4 days later, the health commissioner for New York State announced that they would be rescinded. So they put it in. It's there for 4 days. The New York Post says, hey, look at this. Look at what they just put out 4 days ago. And they go, oh, never mind. We'll take that off. It's kind of what they did with the gun control legislation that went before the Supreme Court. And you had three of the justices say, this is criminal, what we're allowing to happen here. The fact that New York can enact arbitrary gun control legislation that is clearly unconstitutional and, you know, even violating the Supreme Court dictates on this, and then leave that in place, hoping the Supreme Court won't do anything about it, that they won't even hear the case. And then when the Supreme Court says, yeah, we will hear it, just as it comes up, it's like, oh, never mind, we'll take that off. It's now a moot case. Yeah, three of the justices say, we shouldn't make this a moot case. Take a look at what's going on, Bill de Blasio. You know, he got a lot of press yesterday because he was out hectoring a Jewish funeral. You got too many people here. You got to spread everybody in. He was, sent the police out to harass them. He's also been seen jogging in the park without his mask and so forth. He's had his own staff complain about the fact that they're afraid. They're worried about this. But, of course, he's doing whatever he wishes. There's all the police coming out there to harass a Jewish funeral. Got too many people here. You see, they got the masks on even. But nevertheless, somebody put up a couple of posts from Bill de Blasio. I think we should call him not mayor. We ought to call him Ayatollah, I think. Because this is what he had to say. He put out a post on April the 23rd to Muslims. 5 days later, he put out another post to the Jewish community. Let me read you the two posts. This is the one from April 23rd. To the Muslim New Yorkers beginning their celebrations tonight who need halal meals, we have them across our 400-plus grab-and-go meal sites. Oh, yeah, come and get it. Come and take it. Come and take out, right? And we are bringing hundreds of thousands more to 32 sites most frequented by our Muslim communities. Go to newyorkcity.gov/getfood for more. There you go. So what can we do to make Ramadan more amenable to our Muslim New Yorkers? And then 5 days later, April 23rd, my message to the Jewish community and all communities is this simple. The time for warnings has passed. I have instructed the New York Police Department to proceed immediately to summons or even arrest those who gather in large groups. This is about stopping this disease and saving lives, period. Oh, there you go. There you go. That's what he's got. Meanwhile, in Queens, and I'm focusing on this New York angle here because, folks, we need to, that's where most of the COVID deaths are. So the rest of us need to shut down, right? And look at how they're managing it or mismanaging it. Again, keeping the subways open, letting the homeless people sleep there. People who work on the Metropolitan Transit Association or administration, the MTA, are saying, I need hazardous pay because it's gotten real. It's usually bad, usually filthy, usually have a lot of homeless people on here. But this is absolutely insane. And remember, when they were just talking about the possibility of COVID-19 coming to the U.S. and the New York City authorities are saying, we've got it under control. We're not going to shut down the subway. We're going to thoroughly clean it every 72 hours. So, you know, every 4 million people that come through will clean that car. Meanwhile, studies in Queens show that suicides have risen since mid-March compared to 2019. They attribute it to concerns about mental health. Yes, if you scare people to death, if you lock them and under house arrest, and even put them under solitary confinement. And now we've got Fauci pushing this even further, right? Watch out for your pets. You can't trust those pets either. You need to be paranoid about your pets. Yeah, don't go to funerals. Don't go to weddings. Don't go to churches. Don't go to work. You stay locked down, locked in, shut in. And so you have a large number of suicides that are going in. As a matter of fact, on offguardian.org, they actually came up with a term for it. A new disease. We could call it lock-in 20. It goes with COVID-19. You know, we got COVID-19, the response to lock everybody down. We call it lock-in 20. It's a new mental illness. It's causing suicide, depression, as a matter of fact, it's not only suicide individually, but suicide collectively, as a nation, as a society. Yeah, we're murdering everything about our society, and we're letting them do this to us. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Evidence about how corrupt Fauci is. Let's just take a look at this new drug that he is touting. As the Hill reports yesterday, they have one study that came out. Anthony Fauci, key member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, said the results from a clinical trial of a potential COVID-19 treatment showed quite good news, quote unquote, quite good news. He said, quote, it will be the standard of care. Everybody's going to be given it, right? Everybody line up. Medication time. right here at the Cuckoo's Nest. The drug allegedly allowed 31% of the patients to recover faster than they did if they were given a placebo. So one-third of them recovered a little bit faster than those who weren't given anything. Okay? All right. That sounds really promising, doesn't it? One study. They had, I'm not sure how many patients were involved in this study. I don't think it was as high as 700, the number of patients that were involved in the anecdotal treatment by the doctor, Vladimir Lavinko, who gave people hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin for secondary infections, and zinc because it was antiviral. That's what he said. So he looked at what people were doing in other countries. And, you know, we just had the FBI do a full armed raid on a clinic that said, hey, if you are treating people for COVID-19 and you're concerned about this, and you want to, you know, treatment, we're going to offer vitamin C intravenously. And we know that's not going to hurt anybody, right? It passes the safety test. Is it effective? Well, we don't know, right? But because it's not patented, they're not doing any of these tests. But there's a lot of studies that were done, or I should say trials. I don't guess they were full studies. But there was, again, anecdotal evidence that it was very effective coming out of several Asian countries. And so they said, hey, you know, we used vitamin C intravenously in large amounts to treat a lot of different diseases, going back to Linus Pauling. They said, well, we'll do that for you. So the FBI shows up, full hazmat suits, respirators, shuts it down like it is some kind of a bioweapon run by Fauci and the NIH. Oh, they wouldn't do that to any of those labs, would they? They'd only do it to a clinic that's giving people vitamin C intravenously. You get the full treatment from the FBI. The FBI is just so incredibly criminal. Unbelievable. You look at what they did to, still doing to Flynn. We'll talk about that coming up here. And Roger Stone and many other people, even to the president, right? And what they're doing right here is absolutely criminal. And they were part of what happened at the Bundy Ranch and so forth, along with corrupt officials within the BLM. You had a good guy who was a whistleblower at the BLM, and he blew the whistle on all of that and blew it all up. But yeah, so they go in with all their hazmat suits and respirators, and they bust a clinic because they're giving people vitamin C. Absolutely outrageous, just like what the FDA is doing to people who are using their own stem cells to cure disease. As a matter of fact, we got another case. Think about this. We got a drug where they say that they recovered 31% faster than the patients who were given a placebo. And then you've got Scott Gottlieb, a former FDA commissioner, said it's not going to be a cure, but it is going to be a drug potentially that if you use it particularly early in the course of a disease, you hang it in the emergency room when somebody comes in with COVID, especially somebody with risk factors that predict that they'll have a worse outcome from the disease. It could reduce their chances of a really bad outcome, except that we got much better results than that. Instead of people recovering 31% faster, according to Zelenko, you know, he had 700 patients, and I think there was only two of them that he had an issue with, but they didn't, you know, the rest of the patients recovered right away. And he said, hey, if we do this early, like what he's talking about here, if we do this early, we don't have to worry about crowding up the hospitals and the emergency rooms. But Fauci, meanwhile, says, this drug, remdesivir, the patients saw an 8% mortality rate. 8% of them died. Now, in Wuhan, China, a Dr. Wu there, gave umbilical cord stem cells. This is not aborted babies. This is stem cells taken from umbilical cords. They had 9 elderly patients. All of them were in final stages, about to die from this COVID-19 and other complications. Gave these 9 patients stem cells from umbilical cells as part of the treatment. 100% recovery. And not only that, but the stem cells repaired the damage to their lungs. Oh, we won't talk about that. And the FDA tries to keep you from having stem cells. They don't even want to mention that. So why are they looking at something that has an 8% mortality rate and only allows some of the patients to recover 31% faster? They said it's only slightly lower and not statistically significant from the 11.6% mortality rate of the placebo patients. There you go. So 8% versus 11.6%, not statistically significant. And yet, Fauci says this will be the standard of care. It's quite good news. He says that he can, quote, guarantee, unquote, guarantee the drug will improve as more people get involved. The study has not yet been published or peer-reviewed. Wait a minute. I thought when President Trump talked about hydroxychloroquine, he took up there, got up there and smirked and said, well, it's just anecdotal. We haven't done the study yet. You can't talk about anything like that. But now he's saying it's the standard of care. I can guarantee it. It's quite good news, even though it is statistically insignificant. Here's what's significant. It's coming from Gilead Science, this company Gilead. And they had developed it back when we had the Ebola outbreak. What was that? 2014, I think. 2013, 2000, I think it's 14. And you remember we had the same Dallas judge, Clay Jenkins, who is threatening the salon owner, and they had the big rally this last week, and some of the people showed up with firearms to make sure that she wasn't shut down, and she ripped up that fine from Judge Clay Jenkins in Dallas. And it was Clay Jenkins, the judge, who went into the apartment where they had a guy who had come over from Africa, brought Ebola with him, died. And Clay Jenkins goes in, he walks around, hey, there's nothing to fear here, you know, and did everything but lick the walls. And then he goes to a press conference without cleaning up. He had no protective clothing at all, didn't change his clothing, didn't clean up. And everybody was saying, what's going on? Are they trying to spread this stuff? Two nurses who treated that guy who eventually died of Ebola, two nurses got sick. And when they were cured, you had Fauci and Francis Collins of the NIH doing photo ops of them, talking about how wonderful this was. Thing is, remdesivir really didn't help with Ebola. Scientists had real high hopes for it during the Ebola outbreak, but they found it to be ineffective. And so now Fauci is hawking this thing again like some kind of pharmaceutical prostitute. And without any evidence to support it whatsoever, looks like they're going to approve it for emergency use today. Today. I've got more to say about this when we come back. We've got to take a break. I'll be right back.
Mainstream propaganda. This is the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I said I have more to say about this drug from Gilead, remdesivir. The one that they trotted out with Ebola 6 years ago. And then they said, look at this, we got a treatment for Ebola. And then it's like, well, no, never mind. And now they're trotting it out again. Same people, Fauci, Collins, the NIH. Going back just a week ago, April the 23rd, 1 week ago, exactly, STAT, that looks like looks at medical statistics. Here's their headline. New data on Gilead's remdesivir released by accident, show no benefit for coronavirus patients. But the company still thinks they can sell this. So a week ago, what happened was they had a study that came out of China. And it went to the World Health Organization, you know, because the two of them were like hand in glove. And unfortunately, somebody by mistake posted this study up on the World Health Organization's website. And it didn't look too good for this new drug that Fauci is touting everywhere. What he says is going to be the new standard of care. He can guarantee this is going to work. That's his quotes. That's quoted from The Hill. So a week ago, they had this study that came out of China. They said a draft manuscript was provided by the authors to the WHO. and the WHO, somebody at the WHO, inadvertently posted it on the website. It was taken down as soon as the mistake was noticed. What was the mistake? Well, we can't say anything negative about our friends who are selling this pharmaceutical at Gilead, right? The manuscript is now undergoing peer review, and we're waiting for a final version before the WHO comments on it. A Gilead spokesperson said, we believe the post included inappropriate characterizations of the study. Well, what did they say about the study? In this Chinese study, they said that, and these were patients that were in very advanced distressed health issues. They said that it appeared that 14% of the remdesivir patients had died compared to 12.8% of the patients in the control arm. So let's get rid of the fractions. Let's just 13.9, let's call it 14. 12.8, let's call it 13. So 14% of the patients who got the drug died versus 13% who were the control. So it actually was worse. Now, 1% difference is not statistically significant because study that they just did that he was touting, it was funded, by the way, by his organization there at the NIH, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. That's what Fauci oversees at the NIH. So they ran their own study of this drug created by Fauci's friends, his crony pharmaceutical company, Gilead. And in their study, they found that of the severely ill people, that 8% of them died when they were given this drug versus 11.5%, as I just read you. That was not significantly better. Former FDA commissioner Scott Gottlieb said, well, I don't think we've got a cure here. Maybe it might help somebody if we give it to them early. But Fauci says this is a game changer. And he says that it is going to be the new standard of care. So you got one study, both of these studies, it doesn't show statistically any improvement at all. Slightly better in his study, slightly worse in the Chinese study, the people who had it. Slightly more people died. Now, think about that. You know, these are pretty high percents of fatality. Again, these are people who are in very advanced stages of respiratory illness that are brought in. And, you know, you get anywhere from 8 to 14% of the people who are dying with or without remdesivir. Compare that to the study, well, just not the anecdotal, wasn't a study. They didn't have, you know, a control group and so forth. But the 9 patients that were treated with stem cells in China, they were also in advanced stages of the disease. They were in advanced age as well. 100% of them were cured, and the damage to their lungs from the respiratory illness was repaired. But we don't want to talk about that. We will not talk about that. What's going on here, right? What's going on with this? And not only that, but there's been other studies. I said many studies, this is Stat, again, a week ago, Stat says many studies are being run to test remdesivir. This one will not be the final word. Results are expected soon from a Gilead-run study. So here's one that was done in China. They said, yeah, it looks like the people, it was slightly worse for people that got this drug. So Gilead's going to do their own study, and Fauci's going to do his own study. Now, Fauci just released his results yesterday and going to approve it for the FDA as a new standard of care. Gilead's going to run a study, although that study will be difficult to interpret because the drug is not going to be compared to patients receiving only standard treatment. In other words, they're not going to have anything that's anything like a standard test. You know, you got control groups and so forth. In that study at the University of Chicago, there was described by researchers. However, unlike the data, the new results are not from a randomized control trial, which is the medical gold standard. So, you know, they're going to run a test. This is the way they do the vaccines as well. We're going to run a test. We're going to come up with some results, and then we'll tell you what to think of them. But we're not going to use the randomized control model. We're not going to use placebos or control groups. We'll just run it ourselves. That's the way the corporation Gilead is going to run it. And so you've got 3 tests. One of them from China says, nah, actually a little bit worse than people not having the drug. The NIH, slightly better, still not significantly significant, but boy, it's great. We're going to make this the standard of care, emergency approval, and so forth. And then one that's coming up from the drug company itself. There was a tweet from Emerald Robinson that I thought really summed it up well. And she's gotten about 7,000 retweets as of the time this is printed out. Dr. Fauci is as wildly enthusiastic about remdesivir after one positive study, and I'd point out one negative study, one positive study, one negative study, as he is wildly pessimistic about hydroxychloroquine after many positive studies. Some of the comments there. Remdesivir is patented, and it costs $1,000 per day. There you go. That's it. That's why we got ventilators all over the place, right? You get $13,000 for diagnosing somebody with COVID-19. You get $39,000 for putting them on an invasive ventilator. The invasive ventilators cost $52,000. So you're immediately, with one patient, diagnosed as COVID-19, the government will pay for your ventilator. And then you can charge the patient on a per-day basis and so forth, even though 80 to 90% of them die. And as I pointed out last week, I showed you the video, which was purged by YouTube and Vimeo and all the other technocratic controllers of speech. But we showed you that video. You can still find it on my channel at band.video. You can find it on my Twitter feed as well. But I showed you the guy who was talking about it. He had massive number of ventilators behind him undercover that were not being used. He said, we don't have a pandemic going on here. Nobody needs these things. And he said, now I've got two of these. I've been doing this for 21 years. I've got two different types of ventilators. One of them non-invasive. The other one is invasive. Normally, if somebody's got some kind of a respiratory issue, we would put them on the non-invasive stuff first so they don't get sick. We're told not to do that with the COVID-19 patients. Why would that be? Well, it might be because that $39,000 you get if you wait and let them get sick and put them on the invasive one. Because hospitals are going broke. They're not allowed to treat anybody but COVID-19 patients, right? Again, the lockdown. You can't have a business unless you're essential. No medical patients are essential unless they are suffering from COVID-19. And then we'll give them the full fatal treatment of an invasive ventilator after we let them get really bad. So, as this person points out, remdesivir is patented. It costs $1,000 a day, while the hydroxychloroquine cocktail is about $3 a day and has no patent. It's all about the money, folks. It's all about the money. Same reason as Del Bigtree pointed out yesterday. If you didn't see that interview, watch that interview. Dynamite interview I had with Del Bigtree yesterday, pointing out the fact that Bill Gates wants to vaccinate everybody, 7 billion. He's going to make money from that. He has no liability from that. What could possibly go wrong? You can put a product out that you have no liability for, even if you don't manufacture it properly. One person says, I see a similar pattern with the HIV drugs that Fauci, Burks, Gates, Duke, Gilead connections. A pharmaceutical industrial complex to replicate military industrial complex. That's right. That's right. Microbiologists say that testing shows lockdowns are actually harmful. Our government love, our CARES Act, the welfare, the lockdown, the unemployment, the isolation is actually harmful. Actually harmful. But let's finish up with the corruption of Fauci, the guy who is behind all of this. As I was saying before, and it has been reported by many different outlets. But I want to take a look at not just the difference in the amount of money that it costs each day to treat somebody with remdesivir, $1,000 per day, versus hydroxychloroquine, $3 per day, for the that and the Z-Pak and the zinc, right? And, of course, a lot more promising information on the $3 treatment. So why are we going with a $1,000 treatment that he guarantees is going to be a game changer? And it's going to be the standard of care, he said, after one study. Well, as I pointed out, the WHO put up the results of a Chinese study, and it didn't look good for remdesivir. And that was on the 23rd. And then they immediately took it down. Now, the motley fool, let's take a look at the stock market aspect of this, because even though we got $1,000 versus $3 for the treatment, where the real money is to be made, the real killing, the big bucks, is in the stock market, trading on Gilead Sciences and depending on whether or not they're going to be able to have that income, all right, $1,000 per day per person that they treat. And so there were a lot of, as they point out in The Fool, probably never before in history has a stock market's fortunes hinged in large part on the fate of a single drug. But here we are. All eyes are on Gilead Sciences. Not only that particular stock, but the entire stock market's metrics. Everybody was so focused on this. This is a big deal. This is not some side stock over here on the side. Everybody was putting money down on this bet. $1 million on red number 7. That's the casino that operates out of Wall Street. And they all thought they had a lucky stock pick here, right? And so this is written on April the 23rd. Remember, I said that somebody at the WHO accidentally published the results of remdesivir on the 23rd, and they took it down. And that was the study heard around the world, because when that happened, and they pointed this out on April the 23rd, 3 days later, the Motley Fool says, when another report inadvertently posted on the World Health Organization website April 23rd indicated that remdesivir didn't provide a clinical benefit to COVID-19 patients in a Chinese study, the stock market rally largely fizzled out. And so then look at this and say, well, so why is the stock market hanging on the hopes of this Gilead stock and this particular drug, remdesivir? So there's a lot hanging on this. Motley Fool doesn't have an axe to grind about the lockdown. They don't care really about the treatment or what. They're just looking at it from the monetary standpoint, stock market aspect. So they're an unbiased observer of this financial phenomenon that's there. So when we look at this, you can look at this a couple of different ways. Since the WHO and China are so tied into all of this, you think that China plays the stock market? Do you think that the communist Chinese play markets? You better believe they do. Do you think that they own companies? Do you think they manipulate things? When I look at this, I got a couple of different possibilities here. I mean, they could have put that study out to tank it. So they could then buy it down low and then write it back up again. Or, we just accidentally listed that out, the people at the WHO. And at the same time, you had Fauci doing his study. And as I pointed out, I went through the numbers. And I said, neither one of these look any good. Former FDA commissioner says, whatever. It's not that big a deal. It's not going to help anybody. But Fauci's really touting this stuff. He wants this to work. So you could also look at it as like, you know, well, somebody actually honestly published the result of this thing, because even in the NIH study that he's putting out there, it is statistically insignificant what it did for these patients. Insignificant. Certainly isn't insignificant the amount of money they're charging on a daily basis. And Fauci has a long history with Gilead, going back to the Ebola outbreak where they were trying to tout that as a treatment. And that little gold mine didn't pan out for them. So they're having another take at it. I mean, this thing just reeks, folks, of stock market manipulation. This reeks of the type of things that we see coming out of Nancy Pelosi. Insider trading, manipulation of stocks, trading on that information. I don't have anything to prove here, but I got to tell you, my spidey senses are really tingling here. That this thing is one corrupt piece of, what it is, excrement here. The remdesivir study has not been published. It's not been peer-reviewed, comments another person. It's not yet clear whether there was a randomized double-blind arm in the data. The sample size was very small. These are all of the same objections that Fauci made to hydroxychloroquine. Meanwhile, even though he's touting this and offering people a little bit of hope on this, Fauci says that he hopes to watch baseball this summer, even if it's only on TV. Video clip number 8.
As we start trying to get back to normality and pulling back on some of the strict mitigation, you know, we have a 3-phase way to get back to normal. First, you get past the checkpoint, the gateway. You know, kind of like the minor leagues before you get into the big leagues. Yep. Then you go to phase 1. And then if you do well, you go to phase 2 and then phase 3. If we do that successfully and there's no major outbreaks, I could foresee any of a number of scenarios. One of the scenarios would be something that I know is not pleasing to the players like yourself, is to at least get the fans to see it on TV. You know, get the players all tested so they're negative and they're not going to infect each other. Let them go to a place, a few places where you could play ball and play and watch it on TV. That's one option. The next option is to do the same thing, but if things are really low, to restrict the number of people in a stadium. Say, when you get online to get your ticket, the way we do back on Capitol Street, you know, you stand there and you're 6 feet away from the
person in front of you. I'm sorry, I just can't take any more of this little prancing fairy. He's not a fairy, literally. But I mean, this little guy, 79 years old, enjoying the limelight. Look, he's on sports networks now, talking about when he's going to let people watch games. He is on every single program everywhere. He's on media 24/7. He has never been enjoyed this kind of fame. Not even with the Ebola outbreak did he enjoy this kind of fame. And he is just enjoying this too much. Could you see the glee?
Well, I'm telling you, we're going to do this here. We're going to have a couple of different phases here. If you do really well on your tests, I'll let you watch your baseball game on TV. How about that? Is that okay with you, guys?
And this is this fraud. I cannot cover for President Trump allowing this guy to continue in that position. It is beyond incompetence. It is a betrayal of this country. I absolutely agree with Mark Morano. No matter what President Trump has done well, he's done some good things. He's done some bad things. No matter what he has done, you cannot excuse this. This is the worst thing I have seen a president do in my life. And I've been around for a lot of different presidents. You know, Johnson, Kennedy, Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, all these, the Bushes, Obama. I've never seen anybody do this kind of damage to the government, to our economy, to our lives, to the Constitution and our liberties as President Trump is doing by allowing this guy to have a platform allowing him to impose these types of regulations. When you look at what President Trump has put out, they're guidelines. It's called Reopen America. And a lot of conservatives and Republicans are looking at that and say, oh, look at this. President Trump's got a document that says Reopen America. All right, he's with us. He wants to get us back to work. And yet if you look at the document, it's written by people like Fauci and FEMA and CDC. They're the ones who came up with this. Read the document. Just what he was saying. Well, we got these different phases here. We're going to start testing, as soon as we get all the tests. This is why they're saying you can't open up yet, can't open yet, because we got to have the tests out there. Can't let you get back to normal, because if you get out there and everything goes back to normal, their whole scam is blown. Yeah, that's what he's going to wind up doing with the baseball games, like they did in Taiwan. Have some little cardboard cutout figures there with masks over their face saying, stay at home, stay at home. This is the insanity, the gaslighting that is going on. And President Trump's got that blood on his hands. He owns this. The buck stops with him. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Yeah, as Fauci was saying, we got a couple of different phases. If you do really well on this, I'll let you proceed to the next stage. Just say, Mother, may I? Big brother, may I? I think nothing illustrates this better. Well, first of all, if you look at the document, as I said before, it was leaked a couple of days before it happened, and you know, President Trump said, we're working on a plan to do this. Well, they were working on the plan. Trump is not running this. He's sitting back and letting these people run our country into the ground. He's doing this by letting them come up with these plans and these dictates. These people who are never elected, who've been there forever, and he is having the time of his life. Going everywhere, even pontificating about when you can watch sports again. Maybe I'll let you watch it on television this summer. Who knows? if you're all good little boys and girls, if you pass your coronavirus tests. And they're not reliable. But they're, wait, these are the different stages. First of all, we got to educate and communicate for 2 weeks more. They said it a couple of weeks ago. So that was where they came up with the May 1st date. And they said two more weeks, you know, April 15th, two more weeks of communication. In other words, propaganda, gaslighting, lies from these people. Two more weeks of communication. Then we got 2 weeks to start distributing tests to people. And then at that point, we'll have enough tests out. We start testing people. And then this is when the second wave kicks in. Because then they'll say, look at this. We got all these people that are testing positive. We got to lock you back down again. And you've already got the media working on it as part of the communication phase. The Atlantic, again, yesterday I read the editorial for you from a Harvard professor saying, oh, we've got to be more like China. China did this right. China shut down any discussion about anything. They're tracking all these. We've got to do it like China. Now the Atlantic is coming out. What a Marxist rag these people have become. Completely totalitarian rag the Atlantic has become. George's experiment in human sacrifice is what they're talking about now. Attacking the governor of Georgia. Now, remember, as I talked about this last week, you know, President Trump said, I need these governors to start reopening, you know, places where they're not bad. And I read you the statistics, right? That more than half of the cases are out of New York. And 50 times more than we have in Texas. 100 times more than we have in South Dakota. Double what they have even in nearby Connecticut and so forth, right? I don't know. I forget what the statistics were in terms of Georgia. But Georgia's way down there. So they're calling it Georgia's experiment in human sacrifice. And this is what the Atlantic says. Governor Kemp's order shocked people across the country. For weeks, Americans have watched in horror as the coronavirus swept from city to city, overwhelming hospitals, traumatizing healthcare workers, leaving tens of thousands of bodies in makeshift morgues. Georgia has been particularly hard hit by the pandemic. Every one of these things are lies. We've seen empty hospitals. I mean, look at this. Detroit Medical Center furloughs nearly 500 team members amid the COVID-19 crisis. What kind of a pandemic is that when you're having to lay people off, where you're closing hospitals, some cases permanently? And yet, the Atlantic puts us out there. And they get passed around everywhere. They go on to say, public health officials broadly agree that reopening businesses, especially those that require close physical contact, in places where the virus has already spread, will kill people. Even so, many other states are quietly considering similar moves to Georgia. Yeah, because people are not dying. The Atlantic is lying to you, like the rest of the media, about this epidemic. Some people are dying. The elderly are dying. The people in the rest homes are dying. And you got Cuomo putting people who are sick with COVID-19 in the rest home while he's telling everybody, don't you get close to elderly people, I'll throw you in jail. Are they trying to make this an epidemic by putting it into vulnerable populations? By presuming that people have died with COVID-19 without even testing them? No, but when they start the testing, that is going to be the second wave of lockdown. Not a second wave of an epidemic that never happened. It's going to be a second wave of a lockdown.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back, yes, as we look at the lies of the Atlantic every day. It's absolutely outrageous. I think they have become even worse than CNN. Yes, I know, it's difficult, but the lies, the slander, the authoritarian agenda being put out by the Atlantic, what a propaganda piece these people are for a full-on Orwellian state. And yet they are talking at the headline, Georgia's experiment in human sacrifice, simply because they want to reopen. This is the kind of opposition that we face from the media that is gaslighting the public. As they point out, you know, public health officials broadly agree. Who would those be? That would be the Fauci, Burks, and the institutions they represent, NIH, CDC. FEMA. They were the ones who came up with this plan. 2 weeks more propaganda like this, scaring people to death. Then 2 weeks of distributing the tests. And then 6 months of testing to say, oh, we got a second wave here. We're going to have to shut everybody down. And again, when President Trump, just when we're talking about Georgia, remember, as I pointed out last week, President Trump said, yeah, this is good. We've got to reopen America. Everybody wants, my voters want us to reopen America. He puts out a document saying we got to reopen America, except if you look at the document, it's all about testing. And it was authored by these people. Points out it was authored by these people. It's not about reopening America. It's about instituting phase two of the lockdown. Because once they put these tests out, then they're going to tell you, oh, this is spreading faster than we thought, so we're going to have to shut you down again. They're already preparing that. They're already talking about human sacrifice. When President Trump said, it's good. Georgia's doing this. That's good. And then Birx walks over to him and talks. And then later, he said, comes back and goes, that's really bad what he's doing. I can't stop him from doing it, but he really should stop. And we've got to stop him from doing it. So you got the Atlantic coming in. You got the Democrats, the bureaucrats, the press coming in, saying this is going to be an experiment in human sacrifice. President Trump is being completely owned by these people. He's not doing anything about this. And another example of the propaganda, get ready with video clip number one. I tweeted this out the other day. This is a report from Richard Engel. He works for MSNBC. And I want you to, if you're not listening to this, I'll just tell you what's happening with this. This guy is walking down the streets of Sweden. So if you're watching this on video, you'll be able to see this. If you're listening to it, I'll just tell you how this guy looks. He's got a mask on, and you can see all the people in the background and people who are walking past him. Nobody's wearing a mask because we're talking about Sweden. The restaurants are open, he's saying, and so forth. Let's go ahead and run the audio. Listen to this guy, and as you listen to this, I'll tell you, if you're listening to the podcast or listening to it on radio, he's got a mask on. Nobody else does. Now listen to what he has to say. Video clip number one.
Hello, everyone. I am still in Stockholm, Sweden, where it seems like I am the only person wearing a mask. And
yep.
Even with this terrible weather, it's a little cold. It started raining. People are still out. They are still shopping. They are still going to work. A lot of people are trying to work from home. The government has been recommending, not enforcing, social distancing, but not everyone is doing it. And you can go to a restaurant, you can go to a bar. It's a different approach. It's a controversial approach.
Imagine that, being able to go to a restaurant or bar.
Health officials say it is sustainable because they're worried that we could be facing some sort of coronavirus threat for potentially years to come. So they didn't want to impose total lockdowns that they thought would collapse the economy, ruin the education system, and do too much damage to society. We'll see if it works, but this is the approach they're taking here. And now the whole world, it seems, is starting to come out of lockdown, even the most hard-hit places. In Spain, children were allowed to go outside of their homes, get some fresh air.
Even in Spain, children were allowed to get fresh air. Imagine that.
And Spain is now considering even allowing adults to go out and get some exercise. Italy, which was the first country to impose a nationwide lockdown, is going to start opening more on May 4th. And a lot of people, particularly in the south, which hasn't been hard hit, are very much looking forward to that.
So let's end this report before this guy passes out from a lack of oxygen because of the mask over his face. As he points out, nobody else here. I'm the person who is the odd man out. Look, folks, isn't it ironic that the entire world is under Stockholm syndrome except for Sweden? That the entire world has embraced the policies of socialism except for Sweden? They said, we don't want to shut down our economy. We don't want to close all the businesses, the small businesses. We don't want to close all the schools. Everybody else in the world is doing this, pretty much. It's almost like they got together and decided to do this at Davos or something. Almost like that, isn't it? Yeah, millions of Americans cannot afford food, rent, and other basics. And the meat plant workers, however, are saying to President Trump, we're not going to go back to work. You're going to make us go back to work? We're waiting for that check you promised. Where's that check you promised us? The Paycheck Protection Program. Paying people not to work. Again, the Mises Institute. It'll provide us an opportunity to document the anti-capitalist process as it unfolds in real time, the stimulus package. stimulus package. Why don't you call it the cocaine package? I mean, it is just garbage. Like I pointed out yesterday, watching this whole thing unfold is like that story that it resurfaced yesterday. It was a year or so old, but you know, it was a bunch of pigs found somebody's stash of cocaine and consumed it. Didn't say what the pigs did, but I know what the pigs on Wall Street are doing with this stuff. They are going hog wild, and it'll all be blamed on capitalism, won't it? When this fails, it'll all be blamed on capitalism, and it is going to fail, but it isn't capitalism at all. As a matter of fact, the most capitalist country right now is Sweden. They're the only ones not destroying every mom-and-pop business. The coronavirus relief is paying workers more to stay home than they are to go to work, if they get the check to them. And that's the key thing, right? If the government can figure out how to write a check and send out these people, they're just not used to sending money back to people. It's usually done to corporations and to bureaucracies. As the 21st Century Wire points out, this is an operation of propaganda. And I've talked about this before, the 77th Brigade, the British military's propaganda arm. Last Wednesday, during the daily UK government coronavirus live stream, the head of the British Army, General Sir Nick Carter, bragged, "We've been involved with the Cabinet Office Rapid Response Unit, with our 77th Brigade, helping to quash rumors from misinformation, but also to counter disinformation. Between 3,000 and 4,000 of our people have been involved." Think about it. 3,000 or 4,000 people putting out propaganda to lock down the country and to scare people to death. Like that MSNBC reporter in Stockholm. That's one of the reasons why. It's not that Swedish people are freedom-loving people any more so than anybody else in any other country. They just evidently haven't had the full-on propaganda there that everybody else had. And they also had some epidemiologists who had the good sense to not do this and the integrity to not do this. But so we've had 3,000 or 4,000 of our people been involved with around 20,000 available the whole time at high readiness. They're going to go up to 24,000 people to do full-on propaganda to you. Now, again, that goes back to October 2017, the report about the testimony of that military officer as they were talking about social media controlling speech. And the social media officer said, "We're going to have a lot of division coming up here. We got to make sure that we control the information war. We've got to shut down the cannons on social media." And then 8 months later, they shut down InfoWars. 2 months later, they shut down 800 other sites that were opposed to the military industrial complex and the lies that they're putting out. And now you have seen how this censorship has stepped up. It's absolutely phenomenal. It is such heavy-handed, in-your-face, what they are doing with all this stuff. And yet, most people are buying it. That's the most amazing thing. Folks, if you want to keep free speech alive, take a look at the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com, because that's what funds this program, everything that we do. We've got some great specials. We now have Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine now back in stock, 50% off. That is a big fan favorite. We also have Emmerich's Essential Hand Sanitizer. It doesn't come out in a goo. It comes out in a spray, much nicer to use. And we also are now taking orders again on storable food, InfoWarsStore.com. Welcome back. You know, it is absolutely astonishing that people don't realize where this is coming from. It really is coming from the military-industrial complex. We can see it very clearly. As I pointed out, after the big, the representatives of the big social media companies left the show trials, the show hearings, where they said, "We want to talk to you about free speech and how you're going to support that," and so forth, back in 2017, October 2017. And after Twitter and YouTube and Facebook and all them left, they had a military guy come in and goes, no, we got to silence the cannons. We got to control this battlefield that we call social media because we've got to be able to control information. And the UK's got their own organization, the 77th Brigade. It was shown in 2015. They stood up as part of, quote, Army 2020. And here we are. It's 2020. And what kind of army do we have? Well, as I said at the time. We also, though, need to continue to improve our ability to fight on this new battlefield, social media. And I think it's important that we build the excellent foundation we've created for information warfare through our 77th Brigade, which is now giving us the capability to compete in the war of narratives at the tactical level. How many times have I said, DARPA, a DARPA psychologist, came up with the idea of the Internet? J.C.R. Licklider called it the Intergalactic Computer Network. They shortened it to Internet. First examples of that were DARPANET. They were not very effective back in the 1980s. And then when switching circuitry became effective and became practical, they came out of the woodwork to start funding it with venture capital firms. CIA even openly created their own venture capital firm, InQtel. You had the NSA and others put their executives on the venture capital boards of these various organizations. You could see that LifeLog, the creepy program LifeLog to keep track of everything that you do, that shut down right at the same time that Facebook was starting up. Just so happens that Facebook matches exactly what they'd intended to do. You can see that as they say we're going to shut down the cannons on social media, they shut down Alex Jones and InfoWars 8 months later, 9 months later. And this has always been a military-industrial complex operation because the police state industrial complex is just another subsidiary of that. And so as we're looking at this coronavirus thing, the 77th unit comes up and says, hey, we got 3 or 4,000 people working on it. We got another 20,000 standing by to push out information to control this. Control this. Because, you know, the other stuff is disinformation. And this is the part I continue to talk about that people don't pick up the connections of Bill Gates. You know, he's connected to the mandated vaccines and the global tracking and eugenics and all this other kind of stuff. But he has been picked by DARPA to have NewsGuard and ElectionGuard to count the votes. And now they're saying, surprise, surprise, after this pandemic, we can't have face-to-face physical elections. We're going to have to do it online. Who's going to safeguard that? Oh, well, that will be a company that's a wholly owned subsidiary of Microsoft, and their entire budget comes from a DARPA grant. So you understand, the military is controlling our information. The military is controlling social media. The military will be counting the votes. You want to tell me we don't have martial law? Are you crazy? How many times do I have to connect the dots on this stuff? YouTube, shutting down people left and right, as RT points out. RT is always good about pointing out the faults of the U.S. They don't point out the faults of Putin too well, but they are spot on when it comes to pointing out the faults of the U.S. You misspelled censorship. YouTube expands their quote-unquote fact checks to protect Americans from coronavirus misinformation. Yeah, and that's exactly what Twitter has said they're going to do. Just look at how quickly people are shut down. If they say anything anymore about 5G, if they say anything about vaccines, and on and on. Anything that goes against the military-industrial complex and the medical tyranny is how they're rolling it out. If you talk about any of that stuff, you get shut down immediately on all these social media platforms. YouTube does it immediately. Vimeo does it the next day, just like they did with us. And it is on steroids. That's why it's very important to support us so that we can run a video platform, band.video, where views are picking up there. You need to spread that around. It is very important because this is how this all looks in the end. This story from Paul Joseph Watson, majority of Canadians think COVID-19 vaccine should be mandatory. And you got people out there saying, I think the only reason we haven't got this is because they've got the good stuff for themselves. I mean, this is how gaslighted the public has become because they control all this information. And then look at the other side of the police state industrial complex. You know, all of the surveillance tactics and everything. But here's a good example. This story, and I talked about it when it came out, the 21-year-old who was killed in Maryland, Potomac, Maryland. It's now been 6 weeks, you know, because we've been busy destroying the rest of the country after the SWAT team murdered this guy in his bed, in his bed. Police have thus far refused to provide any evidence on how or why they killed Duncan Limp at 4:30 in the morning, a raid on his family's home. But a county prosecutor leaped into action on Wednesday, effectively threatening any Limp family members who would attend a protest over his killing with a $5,000 fine and a year in jail. Now, this is an unprovoked attack on his family home at 4:30 in the morning on March the 12th. He was fatally wounded by the first shots that the police fired through his bedroom window. He was sleeping in bed with his pregnant girlfriend at the time. So there's a guy. He's got a pregnant woman in bed with him, his girlfriend. And without any warning, the SWAT team shows up and shoots through the window. This is why, you know, I've talked many times about Brazil, the Terry Gilliam dark comedy, kind of the Monty Python version of Orwell's 1984. And, of course, it begins with a case of mistaken identity. They get Buttle confused with Tuttle. And then you have these black-suited guys. This was done in 1984, and it was not common at all to have SWAT team raids like that. Not like it is today. I remember seeing it in 1984, and I thought, wow, that's really kind of over the top. I even commented to my wife at the time. I said, you know, that's a really dark version, really extreme. But, folks, it's being done all the time now. As a matter of fact, what was done to this guy was worse than what Terry Gilliam portrayed in that movie. Shot without any provocation, through the window, killing him in bed with somebody else in bed with him. Why did they do it? Police claim they received an anonymous tip 2 months earlier that he possessed firearms. The police department said he was prohibited from owning firearms due to a juvenile conviction. But there was apparently zero court records or any other records to support that as justification. So they say, well, you know, when he was a kid, we don't keep those records around, but he had some firearms things. And so even though we don't keep those records, we realized, and somebody said he had illegal firearms, we realized that even though there was no records that he had been convicted before. So we had to do that. And so then as this is going through, and they not only shoot him, but then they assault the entire family, throwing flash bang explosive devices in the family home and so forth. As the people say, we're going to have a rally because they're stonewalling us on this. They said, nope, because of COVID-19, we'll give you a $5,000 fine and a year in jail if you show up as a crowd to protest us, just like de Blasio went after that Jewish funeral in New York City. Police state is loving this stuff, loving it.
Reverse engineering the high-tech takeover plan. This is The David Knight Show.
Trying to make some sense of it all. But I can see it makes no sense at all. Is it cool to go to sleep on the floor?
All right, let's talk about General Flynn. I haven't talked about this for a while, and I want to talk about Roger Stone because he is scheduled to go to jail today, April 30th. He recorded a final statement, and just stop and think about that for a moment. As we've got violent criminals being let out of jail everywhere, you know, because of COVID-19, they're going to take Roger, who is in his late 60s, and they're going to put him in jail. Absolutely amazing. He doesn't get any mercy at all. As a matter of fact, he didn't get a free trial at all either. That's the other part of this. And it absolutely outrages me. To see President Trump tweet, oh, this is really bad, things like that. You know, come on. Trump, you're the person who could pardon him. What are you waiting for? You don't want the political heat? You won't do the right thing if it's not politically popular? Is that what it is? I mean, I tweeted it out, and it's like, yeah, it is an outrage. But I said, you know, what's really even more outrageous is that you won't do anything about it. Do your job. Somebody comes back to me, well, that's really disrespectful to tell the president to do his job. It's like, is it? Is it? Is it disrespectful to tell him to make sure that individuals' rights are protected? Isn't that the purpose of government? According to the Declaration of Independence, we have rights, things like a fair trial and so forth. And that's what government is supposed to protect. The government's sole legitimate function, their sole legitimate function is not to provide food and housing or jobs or any of that other stuff. Their sole legitimate function is to protect our lives and liberty. That's why we have the Defense Department. That's why we have the Bill of Rights. That's presumably why we have court systems. But when the court systems themselves become a threat to our lives and liberties, when the FBI itself becomes a threat to our life and liberty, you have to do something about that. General Flynn, for example, I mean, things just keep getting more and more egregious. Sidney Powell has been shut down by that crooked judge time and again. And to watch General Flynn twisting in the wind, losing everything he's got, just like Roger Stone, since the beginning of the Trump administration, not a finger lifted to help him. Absolutely amazing. The corruption that is allowed to continue. Get him to lie, the bombshell evidence. Now, yesterday, the Department of Justice on Wednesday informed the court that it has produced more documents to General Flynn's attorney, Sidney Powell. The unsealed FBI notes reveal the intent of the FBI's interview immediately at the very beginning. I mean, this is right as President Trump is taking office, right? And the unsealed notes from the FBI is like, what is our goal? As a putting back, what is the goal of this? What is the purpose of this? Why are we doing this? Do we want truth and admission? Or do we want to get him to lie so that we can prosecute him or get him fired? And so basically they framed him. In other words, here's two different possibilities, the way we get him out of here. Why would they want him out? Well, because he was honest with the American people. He had told the American people, we're behind what's going on in Syria. We are funding and training and running this stuff in Syria. It's one of the reasons why I had high hopes for President Trump. But they purged General Flynn out right away. Number one, get Flynn to, quote, admit to breaking the Logan Act, or we can catch him in a lie. That's the two plans, right? We'll entrap him. We'll lie to him. You know, we'll show up, just some informal questions, you know. And as I pointed out many times, I even played the Monty Python Holy Grail thing where they, you know, they go up to the abyss and the sorcerer, you know, says, answer me these question three. And it's like, first guy goes up and, you know, he asks him a couple of easy questions, then he asks him a tough question and he gets it wrong and goes catapults off into the abyss. And the next guy goes up and he's really scared and he gives him three softball questions. And then the third guy goes up and he gives him a couple of easy questions. And the third one, so what is the average airspeed velocity of a swallow? And he goes, laden or unladen? The guy goes, I don't know. And then he goes plunging into the abyss. But the bottom line is that's what should happen to the FBI. And I've said, I played that clip at the very beginning when this happened. I said, this is nothing but entrapment. It's full-on entrapment. And, you know, the people who need to be thrown into the abyss are not General Flynn and Roger Stone. It's these corrupt apparatchiks, these people who have politicized our law enforcement system and completely corrupted the FBI. What a disgrace. Although they do meet in their headquarters is named after J. Edgar Hoover. So what can you expect from an institution like that? Just raiding a clinic that gives people vitamin C injections yesterday, I reported. It's unbelievable what the FBI has become. Get him to lie. The handwritten note included the documents disclosed to the agents wanting to get Flynn to, quote, admit breaking the Logan Act. And again, the Logan Act, nobody has ever been prosecuted under the Logan Act. We've talked about it. Ron Paul has talked about it. He said, hey, you know, you got these people who are meeting at Bilderberg. You ought to prosecute them under the Logan Act. Because it was about people who did not have the authority to do so, crafting foreign policy. And the whole thing from the very beginning was entrapment. There was no substance to the allegations, even if they had been true. They got him, caught him on some factual errors. That's why I, you know, played the Monty Python stuff here, you know. Ask him, what's your favorite color? Blue. No, it's red. You know, boom, you got him. Put him in handcuffs. Take him away. It doesn't, you know, he didn't even know he was being interrogated or under oath or that this was an investigation. And the questions were non-substantive. And they maintained that it was contradictory. Did you meet this guy at such and such a time? Well, gee, I don't know, whatever, okay? So he pled guilty in 2017, December 2017, to lying to the FBI. And I've reported that they were threatening to give his son solitary confinement and harsh time in prison to entrap his son as well. It's like, you confess and take the rap, or we'll take your son down with you as well. I mean, these people are just criminal. But immediately in January, he told a federal judge that he was innocent of the crime. His lawyer did not represent him very well. Sidney Powell, however, is courageous and a bulldog, and she's not giving up. And then there's this. New FOIA emails also reveal a close relationship between the Washington Post and the Pentagon director, who is accused of leaking the Flynn call. The Pentagon's current director of the Office of Net Assessment had extensive communications with the Washington Post reporter and deep state conduit David Ignatius during Russiagate. According to 143 pages of new records from the Department of Defense that was obtained through a Freedom of Information Act request by Judicial Watch, James Baker, not the Obama FBI's top attorney with the same name. That was James A. Baker, I think. He was involved in this other thing with Flynn. This other James Baker, these guys don't even change their names. You know, they just got a bunch of, I'm Agent Smith. You know, it's like a bunch of clones out of the Matrix or whatever. This James Baker was alleged in a November 1st, 2019 court filing by Lieutenant General Michael Flynn's attorneys to be the, quote, person who illegally leaked transcripts of Flynn's calls with the Russian ambassador, Sergei Kislyak, to Ignatius, who then published the calls on January the 12th, 2017. So I was concerned about this from the very beginning, and I was concerned, like I said, about Pence, who chimed in on all this. You know, this is kind of a he said, she said thing with the FBI. And then Pence goes, yeah, I think he misled me too. I was like, uh-oh, we got problems. We got real problems right there with Pence. And what did you see happen? You know, it was Flynn who was telling us, before he was even picked up by Trump, telling us about the U.S. government's covert operations in Syria, the false flags, things that were happening there. And then what happened with the Pence-Nikki Haley wing of the Trump administration? Well, you know, they pushed all these Syrian false flags. They pushed the Skripal false flag. I mean, these people have done nothing but lie, scheme, and connive. And it's not just the Democrats, folks. It's the people inside the Trump administration, like Pence and Nikki Haley.
On the first part of the journey, I was looking at all the life. There were plants and birds and rocks and
things. Welcome back. We're just talking about the entrapment of General Flynn. The corruption there, how Pence was also somebody, you know, weighing in on that. How Flynn told us the truth about what was going on in Syria, but Pence and Nikki Haley pushing these Syrian false flags on an annual basis. I mean, it was like, I've said it many times, beware the Ides of March, because they're going to have another false flag to try to drag us into a war in Syria. And then they, for the final one, they did a twofer. You know, they came up with a phony narrative about the Skripal poisoning. And I've talked about that at length many, many times. I'm not going to get into that again. But it's just grates on me to watch General Flynn twisting in the wind all this time without any assistance, without any reform of these corrupt institutions, without any pardon. And the same thing I would say about Roger Stone as well. Roger Stone made his final statement last night before being scheduled to be imprisoned today. For a length of time. Again, as he went on with Tucker Carlson last week, said it is essentially a death sentence given his age, 67, as they are in an act of mercy, letting out violent criminals in many places, predators who then go on to commit crimes because, you know, COVID-19. They're going to lock up Roger Stone. I mean, what we have seen with this from the perp walks and CNN being there to record it and all this other kind. It's just disgusting display of corruption in this country. Just disgusting. But what I find interesting about this is Real Clear Politics had a week ago, they had an interview. Roger Stone said, praying for a pardon with full faith in Jesus. And this is a reporter, Myra Adams. She says, as someone who frequently writes about Christianity, who had conducted several interviews with Roger, I asked if he would answer some personal faith questions, and he agreed. I haven't talked to Roger about this. It's been a while since I've had a conversation with Roger. She said, can you explain the journey that led you to tell Mike Allen during the Axios on HBO interview that, quote, I feel pretty good because I've taken Jesus Christ as my personal savior? but that you feared not being right with God. Roger said, I've been raised a Roman Catholic, received all my sacraments in that church. I always had a fundamental belief in God, although it's certainly fair to say that I lived a pretty wild lifestyle and strayed from his path. There were no thunderbolts from heaven or any sudden revelatory moments until one Saturday this past January. On that day, I had made arrangements to meet with Reverend Franklin Graham at his revival in South Florida. While I planned to solicit his support for a presidential pardon, he gave me something far more valuable. Reverend Graham made it clear it wasn't his support that I needed. He said the answer to my plight was to invite Jesus Christ into my heart and my life, because if I did so, he would protect me, never abandon me. So we prayed together for a few moments. Then I attended his revival, which had drawn well over 2,000 Christians. He said, Reverend Graham is a powerful speaker. There was a moment when he called upon those ready to change their life, to be cleansed of their sins. We were asked to stand, take a simple pledge in which you acknowledge your sins, ask for forgiveness, invite Christ into your life. I felt the need to stand with several hundred others and change my life. It was at that moment I saw the clear path ahead. It was as if a cement block had been lifted from my chest. I left the arena with a feeling of peace and relief. And so Meyer asked him, can you describe the positive and negative feedback you received after that Axios interview? He said, well, needless to say, because I come from the rough and tumble world of politics, there are a fair amount of skeptics who believe that my claim of redemption is a head fake, that I'm merely posturing for public sympathy. Ironically, many thought the same thing of former Nixon aide Charles Colson, who went to prison for his role in the Watergate scandal. Yet Colson went on to form a prison ministry, which has profoundly affected the lives of many thousands of people, helping them to find a path to redemption through Jesus Christ. I don't really care what the skeptics say, because he knows what's in my heart. And so she went on to say, well, speaking of Colson, he described himself in his obituary, rather, in the New York Times. He was described as the person who had masterminded dirty tricks for Richard Nixon, some of the dirty tricks that led to the president's downfall. And so she asked him if, what he thinks about that and if he's going to write a book and so forth. But she says, have you turned your faith and journey into action? And this is, I think, a very important thing for everybody. He says, I've returned to the Catholic Church of my parents and my grandparents, and while I do not strictly believe in all their dogma, I'm comfortable with the Church's belief in the Trinity. Jesus Christ is the only begotten Son of God. And Father Michael Grady of St. Anthony's Church in Fort Lauderdale advised me on the single hardest part about being a Christian: forgiving those who have trespassed against you. I believe that a number of those that have persecuted me are truly evil and actually in league with Satan, and I struggle every day to forgive them and to pray for them. It's the single most difficult thing that my reaffirmed faith requires. Absolutely true. And see, that is the real issue. That is, I think, the most important thing here, that he has come to that understanding. Acknowledging Christ, this moment where he realizes that, as Christ say, what is it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Well, Roger's lost the whole world. Do I think that he's sincere in this? I really do. Because, when you lose everything, that has a way of focusing your mind, doesn't it? That's why I said at the beginning of this coronavirus crisis, I said, if people are so afraid that they're going to die and they're freaking out, they're hiding in their houses over this stuff, hang on to that thought for a moment. And think about this, because you are going to die. You don't know how. You don't know when. But I can tell you for certain you're going to die. Then what? Then what? And so the thing with Roger, and again, living out the Christian life, that is the key thing. Not holding those grudges. And if he can do that, that is going to be a major growth pattern for Roger. So they asked him, are you praying for President Trump to grant you a pardon? He said, yes, but I repeat, my full faith is in Jesus. Yeah, Jesus will be faithful, and a pardon for what you have done in life is the key thing that you want to make sure you've got. Yeah, if it does profit a man to lose a whole world if he can gain his soul. So we wish Roger the best as he begins this difficult time. Folks, when you look at the corruption in this world, again, don't look to Washington for a pardon. Don't look to Washington for reform. The good news is that you have the ability in your own life to set things right. And you have the ability in your community to start taking back your freedom as well. We get back to politics. I mean, seriously, the most important, we have exactly the upside down view of the world that we really need to have for our lives to get into order. We think that everything depends on money. No, it doesn't. We think that every problem can, the political problems can be solved in Washington. No, they can't. Reagan got that part of it right. He said, Washington's not the solution, it's the problem. And so how do we stop that problem? I mean, they're pretty big, they're pretty powerful. Well, there are more powerful forces in the universe. And you can begin to establish relationships. This is one of the reasons they want to isolate us. Don't even want you to have access to your pets. I mean, this is where Fauci is going now. What are you going to have, little cardboard pets or little robot dogs, as you've seen all these things? Oh, this is exactly where they're going. I mean, they, you know, everything is going to be Skyped or Zoomed, and they don't want you to have any face-to-face contact with anybody or anything. They want to completely isolate you. We have to go in exactly the opposite direction. This is why I fear so much about these churches that are trying to comply with these unconstitutional orders. Yeah, there's a little robo-dog. To isolate yourselves in a church situation is exactly the opposite of what that church is about. And, you know, to cut people off even from that little bit of contact there. We need to be forming communities. We need to be electing people at the local level who are going to stand for our liberties, who are going to stand for the Constitution, who will stand against unconstitutional authoritarian orders from governors and from presidents, no matter what public official is lying in, you know, what worm tongue is possessing them at the given time. Again, if you want to keep us here on air in these times as every one of our First Amendment freedoms are under attack, the freedom to assemble, the freedom to have free expression of religion, free press, free speech on the internet, all those things under attack. If you want to keep InfoWars here, InfoWarsStore.com. You can find products there to support your health, nutrients, vitamins, minerals, hand sanitizers, Emmerich's essential hand sanitizers. What I like about this is it's a spray and it's not a gel. The new product that we have, and if you buy it in the three different scents, you can get them for 50% off if you buy all three. InfoWarsStore.com. Don't forget, we also have storable food orders now back in stock. Thank you for listening.